So the year was, well, I'm not sure the year. It was in the 1500s. And if you lived in Europe in the 1500s, one of the most amazing cities that you could live in was Venice. It was tucked up at the very tip at the Adriatic Sea. And because of its strategic location in Italy, it was kind of the shipyard and the traveling place where people would come and bring their goods and services to all of Eastern Europe. It was Venice that was the place to be if you were a merchant. It was the place to be where you could make a living and become very, very wealthy. And there was this man that lived in Venice in the 1500s. His name was Antonio. And he lived in Venice as a merchant, and he had a lot of money. And yet, he wanted more money. So he bought all these ships and had all these goods, and he was going to send these ships and the goods out to trade with other communities, other countries, and they were going to bring those goods back to Venice, and he would become a very, very wealthy man. He was already a very wealthy man. Well, he had a friend, and his friend was named Bassanio. And Bassanio was a nobleman, but he'd lost all his money because he had squandered it away. But he found out that there was this lady that he absolutely loved. And he wanted to go and court this lady, but he needed money. So he goes to the one man he knows will lend him money, and the man is Antonio, this man who is super wealthy. And he goes to Antonio and he says, Antonio, can you just give me 3,000 ducats? And I just need it for a short time. I'm going to find this woman. I'm going to marry her. And then she's very wealthy. I'll be able to pay you back the 3,000 ducats. Now, Antonio loves Bassanio as a brother. Antonio would do anything for Bassanio. But the problem is Antonio's money, every single ounce of it, has been put on the ships with all the goods. They're out there in the sea, and he won't see those ships. He won't see that money for any time. So he tells his friend Bassanio, this is what you need to do. You need to go into town. You need to find somebody that is going to lend you the 3,000 ducats and tell them that I will co-sign the loan for you. So when my ship comes in, when my ships come in, I'll pay off the 3,000 ducats. So Antonio goes into the marketplace and he finds a man. And the man's name is Shylock. And Shylock is a Jew. And Shylock is living in Venice at a time when Jews are not necessarily the most welcome people to be living in Venice. You see, Jews were allowed to live there, but they were kind of second-class citizens. As a matter of fact, the truth is that if you were a Jew living in Venice at that time, you had to wear a red hat on your head all the time to signify that you were a Jew. And this particular Jew had been scorned by Antonio. So he was more than willing to lend money to Bassanio to get back at Antonio. And so he told Bassanio, he says, I'll lend you the money. He said, but there's a catch. And the catch is this. If after 90 days Antonio has not paid back the loan, then I want a pound of Antonio's flesh. Well, Antonio's a wealthy man. Bassanio trusts that Antonio is going to come due with the loan. And so they sign this deal and they wait. Well, in this time, Antonio's ships do not come in. As a matter of fact, he hears word that not just one ship, not just two ship, but every single ship with all the goods, all the ships, all the money, all the merchandise, all that has been lost at sea. And he is crushed. But that doesn't prevent Shylock from coming at the end of 90 days and saying, I demand my money. Well, Antonio, I mean, a pound of flesh is a very painful thing. He's not about to give a pound of flesh. He says, listen, I've got people I can get, and sure enough, people come. They're willing to give 3,000, 6,000, 9,000 ducats to satisfy the loan, but they're too late. Because Shylock knew or hoped that Antonio would not come through, and he wanted his pound of flesh. And so it all goes to court. And there at court, you have the judge, Portia, you have Bassanio, you have Antonio, you have Shylock, and the judge is pleading with this Jew to show mercy. Now, those of you probably recognize that, right, this story is a Shakespeare tragedy, right? And it's the Merchant of Venice. And we come to this scene in the court where we've got all these people, and Portia says, "You stand within his danger, do you not?" She's talking to Antonio. "You stand within his danger, do you not?" Antonio says, "A." "Portia, do you confess the bond?" In other words, "Do you owe him money?" "Antonio, I do." "Portia, then the Jew must be merciful." And Shylock says these famous words, "On what compulsion must I be merciful? Tell me that." You see, Shylock is a Jew, and he's not held by the laws of mercy that the Christian gospel is held to. He's a Jew. He operates by the law. Why should he give up for mercy? Then Portia says, "The quality of mercy is not stained. It droppeth as the gentle rain from heaven. Upon the place beneath, it is twice blessed. It is blessed him that gives and him that takes." Today is Palm Sunday. And as I was preparing for this Sunday, and we're also kind of into this coexist sermon series, we're talking about Judaism, I was thinking about Jesus and about how he was raised as a Jew, he was circumcised as a Jew, he was taught the law as a Jew, he went around the whole entire area as a Jewish rabbi, and then he comes to Jerusalem, and he dies and he rises again. Is he still a Jew? Is there a continuity between the Old Testament and the New Testament, or at the resurrection of Jesus, does everything change and now everything is different? It'd be like as if you were moving to a different country and all of a sudden all the rules have changed. Is that what it's like? And I was thinking about the Jew in the Merchant of Venice, and how he said, "I'm a Jew and I don't need to operate by Christian grace. That is not something that's part of my religion." Is that true? When Jesus rode into Jerusalem, was there no grace going on, or was he simply operating under the law? I'd like to spend a moment this morning on Palm Sunday looking at that question, because there is a theory out there that everything changed when Jesus rose again. When he died on the cross, when he rose again, everything changed. It was no longer, God was not operating under the same system. As a matter of fact, it's not surprising to see that when we look at John 1, 17. Because in the Gospel of John, chapter 1, John writes, "For the law was given through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ." And if you look at that verse, you say, well, of course then, Moses is the law and Jesus Christ is grace. And so when Jesus Christ rose from the dead, there was a break from everything that had happened preceding to him, and now a new way of looking at things happened. There's a philosophy that's been going around since the middle of the 19th century. It's called dispensationalism. I'm sure you've heard of it. And it's the philosophy that under different time periods or under different dispensations, God has operated differently. And so you had this Garden of Eden dispensation where God was operating in this kind of infant type of dispensation. And then, of course, man broke the law. And then there was another dispensation, and God treated man differently up until Noah. And then after Noah, between Noah and Abraham, there was a different way because the law hadn't come yet, so God must have had a different way. And then when Moses came and the law came, and from that time up until the point of Jesus, now you have the law, now you have God judging by the law, and then the next dispensation happens when Jesus rises from the grave, and now it throws away the whole entire Old Testament law, and now Jesus operates on the gospel of grace. But there's a problem in that. There's a problem in that, can you have a society that operates solely on law? Think about that. Think about if you lived in part of a society where everything was dictated by law, where everything you did, if you just minor transgression, you're in trouble. I come home, I say hi to Jennifer, and I don't say it in the right voice, and boom, I'm out of there, right? No, she wouldn't do that. She operates on grace. But there are countries around this world where it is operating on the law. As a matter of fact, there's websites that talk about which ones are that way. Like, for example, did you know in Saudi Arabia they still do flogging? They still do amputation and they still do beheading? If you are caught stealing in Saudi Arabia, they'll cut off your hand. If you're caught lying, they'll cut out your tongue. And that is the punishment for doing those things. Now, those people follow the law very much because they don't want those things to happen. But in very many countries around the world, if you just have one transgression, you're out of there. Think of what would happen in your life if just one transgression, you're out of there. You show up for work 30 seconds late and your boss comes to you and say, you're out of here. Or you turn in your homework one day late and the teacher says, forget it, I'm not going to accept this, you're out of school. Forget it. How difficult would it be if you lived in a society that was totally operating by law? Was Judaism at the time of Jesus just operating on law and there was no grace? Well, the answer to that question comes into the nature of God. Because there is a word in the Old Testament. The word grace is never used in the Old Testament, but there is a word that is used in the Old Testament about God. And that word is chesed. And it's a steadfast, loving kindness of God. It is a special sacramental Jewish word that the Jewish people had with their God. And they believed that God was filled with mercy and loving kindness. They believed that there were transgressions, but because God was a generous, merciful, loving kindness God, because they were part of the covenant, they would not suffer the ultimate consequences every time they sinned. Kind of sounds like Christianity, doesn't it? And then the second part was this. Once a year, on the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, they would go and they would offer a sacrifice. And that sacrifice would rise up into the heavens, and when it rose up into the nostrils of the Lord, he was pleased. And he would forgive their sins. Kind of sounds like grace, doesn't it? You see, the Old Testament Jews were operating under the same God that we operate under. Because God is a merciful God, God's a gracious God, and God never changes. So the Jews of the Old Testament, they looked forward to the time when the Messiah would come, and we look back to the time that the Messiah came. And this week in Jerusalem, we see Jesus riding on a donkey, and he's going straight to the cross. And why is he going to the cross? What's interesting is if you look at Hebrews 10, chapter 4, the writer of the book of Hebrews says this, "It is impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sin." And if you read that whole entire chapter of the book of Hebrews, what you find out is that the reason why blood and bulls by themselves cannot take away sin is because you're just doing a sacrifice. In the Old Testament, when they would do the sacrifice upon the altar on Yom Kippur, the reason why that sacrifice was beneficial, why God loved that sacrifice, is it because it would point forward to the ultimate sacrifice when God himself would give up his own life as a sacrifice that purified, that made holy all the Old Testament sacrifices. And today we celebrate the Lord's Supper. And we too partake in that sacrifice. It's not just the bread and the wine, but it is the very body and blood of Jesus Christ where we look back and remember what sacrifice Jesus gave for us. Judaism is not a whole lot different from Christianity. The heart of God never changed. The difference is that at one point in time, a point that was planned from the beginning of the foundation of the universe, Jesus Christ rose again from the dead. And his death and resurrection proved that God will redeem us from all our sins. He redeemed all the Old Testament people, and he redeems all of us from that one event. It is the most crucial event of all of history. It was planned by God. It is the event that we all look to. It's not like there's different ways that God deals with people. There's one way that God deals with people, and that way is My mercy came to you in my Son, Jesus Christ, who took away your pound of flesh that you would be due and took it upon himself and gave me his pound of flesh in your place. This story, Merchant of Venice, when I saw it a couple years ago, Jennifer and I had the opportunity to see it, I was amazed that even William Shakespeare understood the difference between Judaism and Christianity. And yet, if you start looking at people commenting on that play, what you'll find out is something dramatically different, something that probably Shakespeare didn't even understand. See, at the end of the play, Portia says to Skylock the Jew, "You're not operating with grace, and we are a community of grace." So she strips him of his wealth, she takes away all his wealth, and she makes him convert to Christianity. Of course, we pat ourselves on the shoulder and say, yes, justice is done, and yet there are a lot of people that look at that and say, but what about showing grace to Shylock? Isn't he also deserving of grace? You see, nobody can get away from it. God needs his pound of flesh as a repayment for all the sins of this world. Shylock needed it, Antonio needed it, Bassanio needed it, Portia needed it, you and I need it. There is a price that has to be paid, and it's a painful price. But Jesus Christ, this week, comes into Jerusalem and pays that price for you and me in his name.
Life before.